Chapter 5. Our Path in Shadow. It was not true darkness, for even in true darkness there is the suggestion of light. This place had none. In its deepest hollows there lurked an abject unlight, not merely its absence, but an active negation of it. It gave the dark substance, a presence that went beyond disquieting and entered a realm of wrongness at odds with any natural law. The gunship's fierce lumens could not touch the dark, their light simply absorbed. Even the low drone of the turbofans felt subdued as Vulcanis moved cautiously through the unnatural night. Gargo's voice through the vox confirmed it.
I can see nothing out here.
And yet you sound troubled, brother,
answered Zaitos, at ease sat in the hold.
That's a good sign, isn't it?
No,
Gargo replied.
You don't understand.
He means the utter dark, said Vulcan,
lifting up his head from where he had knelt in silent meditation ever since they had breached the Eldritch Gate.
This is the shadowed path, my sons. Light has no purchase here.
Then how do we see where we're going?
Asked Zaitos, beginning to understand Gargo's concern.
I can see well enough, said Vulcan. It's not much farther now.
You have been here before, my lord?
Asked Abidemi. He had been peering through the view slits, trying to glimpse something other than the blackness outside, but now turned to Vulcan. Vulcan nodded, rising to his feet.
Years ago, I led a party of hunters across the shadowed path. The gate beneath Deathfire that we passed through to reach this place. We found another much like it. The old tribes of Nocturne had been prey for those we called Duskwraiths for many years. Each harvest season, when the blood of the world had grown still and the mountains slept, they would come. I decided against fear, though the tribal chiefs desperately wanted to hide, to find the deepest caves of Nocturne and wait the raiders out. I knew this was foolish. They had come for flesh, the hardy backs and strong arms of our people. Slaves, my sons. I would not countenance it. I fought the will of the head chieftains, my father Nebel at my side, and gathered the best warriors of the seven tribes.
Vulcan smiled grimly at the memory.
We ambushed the raiders at the very place where they breached our world, and we killed them. But the gate remained, a dark and flickering tempest that promised great evil if left alone. I chose to enter it, and to my shame I took our warriors with me.
Vulcan's face fell, his expression darkening with the tone of his recollections.
We should have destroyed the gate, but I thought I saw a chance to end the suffering. I was wrong. They died. Every warrior I brought with me slain. None had good deaths. They fell screaming and shrieking, ripped apart or dragged off into the shadows to a fate I cannot even imagine. Only I escaped, by virtue of the gifts my gene father had bequeathed to me. Though then it was several years before the Emperor came, and I knew of the Imperium. I closed the gate, tore it down with my bare hands, bloodied and ashamed of my hubris. I knew that to do anything other would be inviting immediate reprisal. The laughter of the Duskwraiths followed me all the way back to Nocturne.
Vulcan met his son's gaze. Anger hardened his jaw and his eyes burned as hot as a furnace.
The next harvest, the Duskwraiths returned. I did not realize then that they could find us almost at will. They had many ways onto our world. We fought them off. I killed a great many, but could not atone for my folly.
The Eldar, said Zaitos.
The Duskwraiths,
Vulcan nodded.
I have heard the Eldar are a divided race, offered Abidemi, that there are those amongst them who embrace a cruel, malevolent creed.
This is their realm, said Vulcan, and engaged the Vox.
Halt the ship, Igon. We are getting out.
The engine sound diminished to a dull growl as Scargo set the Thunderhawk down. The descent had been disconcerting, the depth to reach something solid underfoot uncertain and fraught with peril, despite the Primarch's assurances. They landed hard, the clawed stanchions that supported the ship barely extending in time.
Blood of Nocturne,
spat Zytos, as the heavy blow resonated throughout the hold.
We are down, brothers, father,
said Gargo from the cockpit.
An unnecessary announcement,
Zytos replied, exchanging an irritated glance with Abidemi, who had begun attaching his scabbarded sword to his weapons belt. The ramp lowered a few seconds later, and the dark lingered beyond it. The salamanders had donned war helms, even Vulcan, but despite the retinal enhancement of their armor, the black remained impenetrable.
On my lead, my sons, said Vulcan,
his voice barely rising above a whisper.
Stay close. Stay quiet.
They exited the ship, using the runic designators on their helm displays to maintain proximity. Sound was aberrant here. No echo came from their armored footfalls against the ramp. To Zytos, even his breath rang flat and hollow inside his helm. But having left the confines of the ship and gazed out upon the hinterlands of this strange, unnerving place, he discerned shapes.
I see. This is their land, Beric. The outskirts of a city. Aelindrak.
Zytos turned sharply to his father.
You know it by name.
Vulcan
began, looking down as if clutching for a memory.
I do.
The talisman, the one with seven hammers upon its face, was in the Primarch's hand. Zytos had not paid much attention to the talisman at first, deeming it just another part of the Primarch's armor. But now he did. His eye was drawn to it. Its form was as absorbing as the dark.
I will find a path, said Vulcan,
as if he knew what Zytos was looking at without having seen him do it. He raised his eyes, and the talisman, the hammers, turned.
Compass, then?
Asked Zytos, wondering at the artifact's purpose.
One that can navigate this Eldritch Night,
said Abidemi, drawing his sword with a flat scrape of monomolecular steel. Vulcan regarded the talisman of seven hammers.
Hagen, he said through his vox, follow us. Stay close.
As Vulcan led on, Zytos and Abidemi in his wake, the gunship rose up on seemingly muted engines. Air blew out from its whirling turbofans, but it was cold, and frost soon crusted the armor of the three in front.
Pay it no heed, Vulcan told them.
Zytos shook his arms to shatter the worst of the ice, and heard mocking laughter as it came apart. He stopped to look around, finding only darkness and the suggestion of statues or towers that might have been kilometers away, or only a few meters. Distance had become hard to gauge. Even their armor appeared bleached of vigor, vivid greens and vibrant reds becoming pale and insipid.
Keep moving, Vulcan told him. Do not slow down for anything. We are being watched.
Zytos unslung his bolter. It had a dragon mouth at the end of the barrel and finely wrought gilt chasing around the grip. He nodded to Abidemi to do the same, and the two warriors began searching the shadows for threats. None came. The darkness began to abate, and in its place arose a noisome marshland of talon-like reeds and shallow brackish pools. Towards the black horizon, Zytos thought he made out a long row of signs, their posts driven deep into the dark, loamy soil underfoot. It was only as he narrowed his eyes that he realized the signs were crucifixions, their victims still hanging in place. He felt a hand upon his shoulder, but heard Abidemi's steady breathing.
Nothing but pain out there, brother.
Zytos nodded, his gaze lingering for a moment before he turned away. The marsh appeared endless, with little to distinguish it. Hillocks arose in places, surrounded by cold, still water as black and thick as oil. Hunched figures crowded on some, lurkers that had the appearance of men, only rangy and emaciated, their skin grey and jellied-looking. Without eyes, they sniffed ceaselessly, scent pits flaring at the collision of strange odours presented by the drakes. One arched back its head to let out an inhuman howl that spoke of thwarted hunger. Then, as a pack, they scurried agilely away.
"Do not concern yourself with them," said Vulcan. "They are bone-pickers, carrion-eaters. Too craven, and not nearly starved enough to bother us."
Zaitas loosened his grip on the bolter, but only marginally. A little way ahead, the marshland grew firmer underfoot, and the tangled bough of a tree emerged out of the shadows. It loomed even above the Primarch. Pale and thorny vines choked the scaly bark of its wizened trunk. A tarry sap dripped from where the tree's flesh had split, pooling at roots that drank the filth eagerly, as though they were the mouths of suckling babes.
"Is it a sign of some kind?"
ventured Abidemi, taking care to give the tree a wide berth.
"We called it the Wounded Tree," said Vulcan. "It was to be our marker, so we would not get lost. It has grown since I last saw it."
He looked closer.
"Still here? I don't believe it."
Old sigils had been carved into the trunk. Vulcan traced each one with his outstretched finger, close enough to the tree that the edges of his boots touched the tarry sap, and he stood entirely in the shadow of its wretched bough.
"Tribal symbols," he whispered, "of the warriors who followed me here."
Zaitas turned his head, angling his neck up and inhaling loudly through his helm's rebreather.
"Do you smell that?"
he asked, scowling. A stagnant odour had suddenly drifted across the grey wilderness. It reeked of decay, of old and dead places. Fog came with it, creeping low and steady across the ground. It spread eagerly across a rugged hinterland of bleak undulating hills, patched with long dark grass and the rough spiny gorse that had supplanted the fetid marsh. Ice freckled the grass, shattering like glass underfoot. The hunched and sightless lurkers returned, but kept their distance. As Zaitas watched, he realized they were fleeing from the fog. His eye was drawn to a glittering tract of water, an oily lagoon he had not noticed before. Mist bled off its surface like fever sweat, congealing into the bland, colourless fog that had terrified the lurkers. It reached across a range of low hills, climbing rather than pooling in the shallow valleys, its edge a tendril-lined fringe that took on the appearance of fingers, grasping, hungry. The lurkers had scattered, lost to burrows and hollows. At the edge of the lagoon, or was it at its heart, standing upon the water, an entirely different figure could be seen. Its precise appearance was difficult to discern. It shimmered, as if both solid and incorporeal at the same time. Tall, dishevelled, with ragged white hair hanging down across its face, it pointed a large curved blade at the interlopers. Then it was gone. Not fled, just vanished like a shadow in the sudden absence of light. Zaitas looked again to the fog. New shadows coalesced in that bleached miasma. Humanoid, armed with hooks and blades, the twin of the figure on the water. Zaitas let out a warning shout, but when he blinked, the shadows had gone. By the time Abidemi reached him, Zaitas was already lowering his bolter.
"Nothing,"
he hissed, scouring the fog. He suddenly wished he had Gargo's Auspex, but that was with their pilot in the gunship's cockpit. In the few seconds that had passed, the strange fog had crept closer.
"Something is moving in it,"
said Abidemi, taking aim. Zaitas saw it too, a figure crawling on hand and foot, slithering upon its belly, a blade shimmering between clenched teeth. Its eyes flashed once, as green as dirty jade, before it disappeared. The fog crept closer still.
"There!"
shouted Abidemi, rushing to the left as he took a kneeling stance and sighted down his weapon. Another Orphidian figure skittered just below the mist, its face obscured by long, lank hair.
I have it!
Declared Abidemi triumphantly. But the figure vanished, and another appeared in its stead, only closer. Zaitos had this one in his crosshairs, having taken up position on Abidemi's unguarded flank. Together they formed a drake-scaled island, about to be surrounded by a vaporous sea. A muffled shot rang out as Zaitos discharged his weapon. He waited for the killing detonation of his bolter shell, but instead he heard and saw nothing.
It's not possible, he murmured. It was in my sights.
Another,
said Abidemi, and unleashed a burst. Again the expected impacts never came, somehow absorbed by the fog. He stood. So did Zaitos, as a host of the strange figures appeared at once. The fog had begun to foul the salamander's auto-senses, and accurate targeting became almost impossible. Inaccurate would have to serve instead. Muscle flare erupted from their bolters, briefly adding light to the dark, but the weapons' once thunderous reports were swallowed almost entirely. Sustained salvos scythed into the fog, kicking up earth and sending watery plumes skywards. Zaitos held out a hand, gesturing for them to cease. He read the data screed across his retinal lens in disbelief.
No casualties. Impossible, hissed Abidemi,
replacing a spent clip with swift and practiced ease. He resumed firing. So did Zaitos. The fog had all but reached them, its fingers stretching impossibly, the tips lengthening and tapering to fine points like blades. A resounding hammer blow struck the earth, staggering the drakes, and the fog recoiled. It retreated back into the shadows, taking the grim creatures with it. Vulcan stood in the legionary's midst, the pommel of his hammer stamped hard into ground, cracked by brutal impact.
Come, my sons, he said, his hard eyes burning, regarding the shrinking fog. They won't be gone long.
A short time later, the drakes passed into a benighted grove, whose trees defined a wandering path, their branches reaching above, their roots tangling below. Mist lingered here, too, but it was thinner than that which had formed across the water. It lurked around the yawning boles of trees, or gathered where black and spiny leaves grew thickly. But it did not intrude.
They are the denizens you fought, aren't they?
Said Zaitos, his voice a conspiratorial whisper.
The ones who killed your kin?
Vulcan nodded. The three stayed close to each other, but Gargo in the gunship had to fly above the grove, or risk becoming ensnared in the eager, grasping limbs of its trees. He had seen and heard nothing during the incident with the fog, claiming to have only witnessed the others standing by the wounded tree, and no more than that. Vulcan had chosen not to refute what Gargo believed, rebuffing his concerns with a father's reassurance and seniority.
What are they?
Asked Abidemi.
Shadows of a kind, uttered Vulcan, but did not elaborate.
He held on to his hammer with two hands and kept the haft close to his chest. Both Zaitos and Abidemi had unsheathed hand-to-hand weapons too, deeming bolters too unreliable in this night realm.
Like none I have ever seen,
breathed Abidemi, keenly watching the darkness, Dracorus held out in front of him like a flaming torch.
We didn't see them, brother,
said Zaitos, Thunderhammer grasped high up the haft.
Can they be killed?
I'm not sure if they are entirely alive, admitted Vulcan. But yes, they can be vanquished.
He said it with the authority of one with first-hand experience.
Well, how, if our bolters are so ineffective?
We have to wait, answered the Primarch.
Wait for what?
For them to get close.
As strategy goes,
Zaitos began.
It is a hazardous one, Vulcan agreed.
As they passed through the grove, Abidemi reached out, but stopped short of touching the spiny leaves. They looked like knives, only black and perversely veined. Something squirmed in the tree trunks, writhing in pain.
I do not know what I expected of this place, but it was not this. Nature itself has been subverted, corrupted, and I suspect these are not even trees.
Vulcan's silence spoke for him. After a few moments, Zaitos wanted answers.
This shadow path,
What is it, Father?
You are standing on it.
No, what is it? I looked back through the grove down the path and I saw nothing of whence we came. It wasn't shadow or fog. It had gone. And I believe if I tried to return to it, to retrace my steps, I would emerge somewhere else entirely.
Vulcan stopped, letting the talisman of seven hammers gently fall against his breastplate.
It is a realm between realms. A place known to few mortals. I took us through the gates beneath Deathfire because I knew it would bring us here to Elendrak. We roam its edges, its untamed wilderness. To descend into it proper would be unwise, even for me. But the city, it knows.
Vulcan gestured to a ragged avian creature, perched on a high branch. Its slick feathers shimmered with a wet sheen that reminded Zaitos of blood. The creature gave off a caw of displeasure that sounded very much like a female voice, before taking flight on emaciated wings.
It sees us, Vulcan continued, and is trying to ensnare us even now. The darkness, the fog, this grove of wretched trees that are not trees. Elendrak is moving against us.
It's denizens?
Asked Epidemi, still watching the wretched bird depart.
Yes, but also the city itself. Its borders are shifting, folding, like a slow waking predator that realizes prey has stumbled into its lair.
As Zaitos looked into the darkness and the silhouettes of the trees, he realized they were moving, subtly like shadows stretched against the light, ever reaching.
We must not linger, said Vulcan.
They moved on, travelling in wary silence until the grove thinned and yielded to dark moorland studded with black menhirs. A light shone here, but not from any sun. A great orb loomed above, appearing only half real, somehow both present and absent at the same time. Its bleak light fell on a scorched black knoll, out of which sprouted a tower. Beyond the tower lurked the distant lights of a city, creeping closer.
This is the threshold, said Vulcan,
first eyeing the tower and then glancing up to the gunship.
Aegon,
he said across the vox,
bring the ship in low. Keep the engines quiet.
He looked back to the winding city in the far but narrowing distance. Every blink seemed to bring it closer.
Eyes lurk everywhere.
I see no birds, no fog, said Zaitos.
Vulcan met his gaze.
They follow us, Barak. They have followed us ever since we passed beyond the wounded tree. And the closer we get and the longer we stay here, the more they will see.
He gestured towards the tower.
Our path lies within. Its denizens are waiting. They have let us come this far. But now they will have to act.
Let us, Father?
Zaitos asked, incredulous. Vulcan dismissed his doubt with a glance.
Earlier was just gauging our strength. Rest assured, they will come to try to keep us from the tower.
What awaits in there, Father?
Asked Epidemi.
A gate, Atok. One we must breach.
Well guarded, I assume,
said Zaitos, hefting his hammer.
I have no doubt, said Vulcan, and he led them on.
The menhirs sunk into the earth sang as Vulcan forged a certain path through the dark moor, warning his sons not to touch the stones or approach too closely. Depending on the angle they were viewed from, the stones appeared to shimmer, translucent, iridescent. At other times they disappeared entirely, only to then manifest within touching distance. Faces became apparent, lurking within their apparently fathomless depths. And then they weren't singing any more, but screaming. The keening wail of these damned souls grew deafening until at last the drakes had passed through, and silence and sanity returned. The tower loomed then, large and imposing before them, a spear of dark crystal driven deep into the earth. It jutted upwards, a spiked crown around its neck, just beneath its bladed tip. No obvious way in presented itself. Zaitos walked the tower's entire circumference, but found no door or window. No cleft or archway of any kind. Abedemi, too, found no path inwards, nor did Vulcan, who had returned to scrutinizing his talisman again. Zaitos briefly glanced at the sky, and then the grim moorland, but detected no threat. Gargo roamed the air, staying close. Vulcan had forbidden him from unleashing the gunship's weapons on the tower, deeming it pointless and only likely to attract further unwanted attention. Now he was here, at the end of the shadowed road. Zaitos had become aware of the slow awakening the Primarch had mentioned. Something slumbered in this ancient hollow. It grew cognizant of their presence. Zaitos did not fear it. He feared nothing, and would fight to the death by his resurrected father's side. But reckless courage would not see them through the shadowed road. Caution would.
Abedemi,
he voxed, hoping two pairs of eyes would be better than one as he returned to the tower. What he saw in the dark glass made him stop short. A doppelganger regarded him, unnoticed by Zaitos before. It mimicked him at first, but as he looked closer he realized its movements were slightly out of sync, until at last it did not move at all, but merely stared.
"What is this?"
he whispered, and the doppelganger whispered back.
"What is this?"
Rhyme began to creep across the glass. Zaitos raised his thunderhammer, sending a whipcrack of power across its head.
"Don't mock me, Shade! Show yourself!"
The doppelganger gave a short, gracious bow and then changed.
"I will show you. I will show you everything."
It stretched, its proportions grotesque and somehow altered, so it was Zaitos and yet not. Gnarled horns burrowed through its battered helm, flaking away like spent skin. Its eyes burned with a greasy hellfire that caked the edges of his retinal lenses with grimy soot. Its mantle, no longer made of drake scale, glistened like fever-drenched flesh. A horrifying simulacrum stood before him in the glass, framed by the creeping cancer of the frost. Zaitos tried to recoil, but could not. His hammer fell loose by his side, useless in the thrall of the dark glass, holding him against his will, seizing every limb in ice. He reached out, determined to shatter the glass and undo whatever enthrallment had been inflicted on him, when he saw a gauntlet grown ugly with talons, the metal black and corrupted.
"It cannot be,"
he gasped, looking down and seeing the reality of his horrific transformation, unable to prevent it.
"It cannot be!"
he roared, defiant, and a serpentine tongue slipped from the mouth of his warhelm to taste the air.
"It cannot! Barak!"
Zaitos felt himself yanked hard away from the tower. As he sprawled onto his back, half mad with the visions, a hammer blow cracked the glass and banished the grim reflection. A firm hand gripped Zaitos around the forearm, prodigious strength hauling him to his feet.
"Barak!" urged Vulcan. "Draw your weapon, they are here."
The frost swathed the dark moor, cracking across the menhirs and shawling the rough glass like a cloak. It was their sign, he realized, the shadows in the fog. Groggy, Zaitos found the haft of his thunderhammer and felt sense return. He was as he had always been, a salamander. Vulcan had broken the grim fiction that assailed him. Other images filled the glass now, not reflections but captured shadows, dividing along every fracture caused by Vulcan's blow, lethal, corporeal, and manifold. Overhead, the fell birds returned, cawing an announcement. Images filled Zaitos's mind.
"Long lank hair, the colour of winter, flows on an unfelt breeze. Skin black as oil, rune etched in smoking viridian shimmers. A hooked blade, a curved sickle, a serrated sword, their edges catch the light. Dirty skirts of ragged brown leather, tied with braided sinew, draped languidly as..."
A hand engulfed in green fire reached out through the glass. A shadow thing sprang at Vulcan, who struck as it leapt for him, obliterating bone that was not bone, sundering flesh that dispersed into tatters of night. It came from the dark, its presence in the glass another lie. Vulcan felled another as it bled from the shadows, his unyielding hammer reducing it to ragged strips of darkness that drifted in the wake of his swing like tossed feathers. A third appeared in the wake of the second, and Vulcan crushed it, the body dispersing into a fine black powder before dissipating on the breeze.
"Barak!"
shouted Vulcan.
The enemy ranks swelled. A ring of grinning shadows appeared, their eyes gleaming and malevolent, their hooked and sickle blades chiming. Zaitos engaged. His first swing cut air as he misjudged the blow. A second fared no better, but earned mocking laughter. A blade struck into his side, biting, painful, and a rash of warning icons flared in his retinal feed. Zaitos ignored them. He deflected a sickle aimed at his neck. It rang like a bell, the shadows cackling as they surrounded him, their faces twisting and reshaping. The blade had lodged fast, its wielder soaring eagerly. A thunderhammer cleaved air and failed to land. Two slivers of jade narrowed, amused at an enemy thwarted. Zaitos roared, venting his anger. The sickle returned, aimed high and glinting dully. A hammer's haft repelled it but missed the chain. His forearm, ensnared with an adder's swiftness, hauled off balance, Zaitos stumbled. Yanked clear, the blade that had struck him left a gouge. Another blade hooked into the joint between greave and shoulder. Blood spouted from the wound, forcing a muffled cry from Zaitos. Shadows rippled, bolder, hungry, finding nourishment. Faces shimmered as cold malevolence turned to hunger. Maws opened, overwide, fringed with needle teeth.
"They feed on pain," said Vulcan, smearing a shadow thing into the tower.
Zaitos snarled, his pride hurting more than his flesh.
"They've feasted on this!"
The hammer swung side to side, a brutal pendulum at arm's length. Two shadows died, one shattering as if it had been blown from glass, while the other bled away like dispersing ink. No two deaths, if death was what truly had claimed them, were the same. A lamprey mouth latched onto his shoulder, biting deep. Zaitos gave a strangled cry of pain, then crushed the head, and the shadow winked out, a light extinguished. From the corner of his eye, he saw Abedemi cut one into smoke. His brother cleaved a savage circle with Dracorus, slicing off strips that drifted away like thin parchment, Numion's former sword reaping a tally.
"Stand with me, brother!"
Zaitos called to him, and they fought back to back. Vulcan fought alone and gave no quarter. Beset by these wraiths, he took a measure that would have broken any corporeal foe. But the shadows were relentless.
"Drak sword!" he cried. "To my side!"
Abedemi led a brief charge across the moorland, and soon all three drakes were united. The gunships circled above, harassed by flocks of dark birds, the emaciated ravens of the grove having reached them at last and reacted to the aerial threat. Gargo gunned them down with prow-mounted heavy bolters, and the air filled with rangy feathers and bloody sinew. He peeled off left, more ravens giving chase, unperturbed at their fellows' destruction, and became a distant shape against the horizon. Before the tower, the wraiths attacked from every cleft, every scrap of darkness. The moors thronged with them, sibilant, half-seen, perfidious. Zaitos and Abedemi held them back, cutting several down, but the tide kept rising. Vulcan hurled back a swathe of shadows and let the darkness take them, earning a few seconds' respite.
"Keep them back," he told his sons. "This only ends if we breach the tower."
"Breach it how, father?"
"It is protected by a shadow field, Barak."
"A barrier?"
asked Abedemi, fending off two cuts with a single crossways slash of his sword. Both warriors looked battered, their armour split in over a dozen places. Blood dripped down Abedemi's right gauntlet, and ice numbed Zaitos's left leg, turning black around the greave.
"A powerful one," replied Vulcan, "but it will yield to me."
The tower was the shadow field, realized Zaitos, and he heard the blow against it like struck thunder. But it did not yield. Vulcan swung again, two-handed, putting all of his strength into the blow. The tower cracked. Fissures rang across the glass like ugly veins, but as they did, the older cracks resealed. Every fresh attack undid the damage of the last. Determined to breach the tower, Vulcan unleashed a hail of blows, but did no better than before. He looked at the talisman of seven hammers, but it didn't move. Its purpose remained mysterious. As his fingers touched the fulgurite, he felt the tremble of god power within, but knew this was not the way either. How he knew these things, how he had acquired these instincts, Vulcan could not articulate.
but he had returned from the dead in possession of hitherto unknown knowledge. Matters were becoming clearer, but gaps in his understanding yet remained. Rather than trying to grasp something beyond his reach, Vulcan focused instead on what he did know. He had come here before, long ago. His warriors had reached the tower. It was a gateway. He knew this. But it was more than that. It led to another place first, to the Hunter of Heads and a dark refuge, a lair, a thwarted predator denied his due. Lowering the hammer, Vulcan leaned close to the glass, so close his hot breath fogged against a frosty pane.
"I'm here, Karadruak," he whispered.
The hail of his father's blows still rang in his ears, and Zaitas glanced over his shoulder in the hope of seeing the tower broken. Instead, he saw ice rhyming empty footprints, and no sign of Vulcan.